Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Professional Insight Podcast, Season 3. Thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you to our sponsors, Brand Boulevard. Our guest today will be getting a nice notebook from Brand Boulevard, COVID-friendly, of course, and socially distancing, giving it to him. My name's Brandon Curry.
I'm Jeff Collins.
I'm Josh Bond.
And Trevor Lindy.
I am pleased to welcome our next guest, Michael Rass from Meridian Credit Union, a director of government relations and stakeholder relations with Meridian. Did I get that right, Michael? Like, that's a long title.
Yeah, I know it's a long title, but, you know, I do a lot of things, so I've got to have a long title.
Thanks very much for coming, because there was a bunch of tweets that were going back and forth and some great announcements last week, which probably got buried because of COVID. By the way, to our listeners, we are recording this on October 14th, 2020, just in case any references seem a little bit out of the blue when you download this podcast. Minister McNaughton announced from the government of Ontario, announced a, and if you can kind of shed some light on it, basically the shift that funding towards apprenticeships and skilled trades. You want to kind of maybe put that in layman's terms for all of our listeners, Michael?
Yeah, sure. So this has actually been happening for a couple of years now, since the Ford government was elected. And even arguably some of this was happening beforehand. But it started with announcements that were made when the Ford government was first elected that suggested that funding colleges and universities should be tied more closely to employment and skills training. So money should follow the jobs, in other words.
Right, well, makes sense. And,
which, exactly. I think this is something that, you know, this we've needed to see this for some time. And at first, of course, it was met by the normal resistance from any stakeholder that encounters change and to shake up the academy, so to speak. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Before I joined Meridian, I'll use this as an example of where I think some of the challenge lies. It's not necessarily the skilled trades. Before I joined Meridian, I was executive director of a group called the Federation of Ontario Law Association. So I represented lawyers in private practice across Ontario.
Boo.
Yeah, I was a lobbyist for lawyers. I was a lobbyist for lawyers. So, I mean, the dregs of society that, you know, even worse than used car salesmen were me.
Oh.
Hey, at least I'm not a financial planner, something like that, right? But what I found extraordinary working in that field was the common complaint that lawyers, when they graduated from law school, were not prepared to be lawyers. They had no training in the actual practical business of running a law firm. Another thing, which just blows me away. So what ended up happening is that programs were set up for postgraduate graduation. So you did an undergraduate degree, then a law degree, and then you had to do another couple of courses through your articles or through law practice programs. Or what is happening increasingly is that finally law schools are recognizing you doing this. And so Lakehead's Law School and Ryerson's new law school, which will starting up next year, have programs to get to teach you how to become a lawyer.
We have enough lawyers.
Well, that's true. That's a whole other topic of other podcasts. But same thing. I teach a little bit or have taught at Seneca College at a postgraduate program, the only one of its kind in the country, a postgraduate program in teaching government, the practice of government relations. And every one of my students has an undergraduate degree, and very few of them know how to write for business. They don't know how to communicate for business. They're graduating with an undergraduate degree, typically a BA or a Bachelor of Science or something like that. And no one teaches the practical skills that you need in business or in the professional environment. So same thing is happening in the rest of the academy, or is happening too much in the rest of the academy. We're not training to the skills that you need, that employers need. So that's what's happening in terms of what the government was doing. And that's the first part of their strategy, I think. And the second part is to focus more on the skilled trades. We have a major skilled trades labor shortage. The construction industry suggests that they're going to need 100,000 new construction industry skilled trades over the next 10 years. That's a small number.
100,000?
Right. That's the skilled labor shortage in Ontario alone over the next 10 years. And that, I think, is probably an underestimate.
Well, you know, one of the weird things about that, my partner's a carpenter, and he's only allowed to have one apprentice under him, and he could easily handle more than one apprentice, which makes it tough just to find an apprenticeship for it. Weird. They should open that up a bit.
And that's precisely what the government, the Ontario government, is announcing. It's trying to open up the apprenticeship systems, trying to open up, remove all those barriers to entry, increasing interprovincial labor mobility. Like, there are a lot of pipe fitters and welders unemployed in Alberta right now that can't get work elsewhere. I mean, we got to be able to move people around the country a little bit. So that's all part of it. But anyway, just as I was saying, that 100,000 is a number at the low end of the estimate. I was reading today that if we moved into small modular nuclear reactors, distributed nuclear reactors, a new technology, we'd need 70,000 people just to build those in Ontario alone.
Is that 100,000? Maybe you're going to be just touching.
No, go ahead.
I apologize. Does that include the reactors going down in 2025 and 2026 in Pickering?
That's another 25,000 jobs.
Oh my God.
Right.
So that 100,000 is just at normal demand. That's not the two reactors going down and being refurbished.
There's crossover, right? So that's not including, or that 100,000 is what's needed in ICI construction. But out of that number is assuming that we're going to build a subway in Toronto, assuming we're building the LRTs in Mississauga and Eglinton and Toronto and potentially Hamilton. That's not including all the housing that we need built. The housing sector says that we need to be building something like 250,000 new units of housing every year.
Sorry, Michael, did you say it didn't contemplate or didn't assume?
It does.
Okay. Like the subway and expansion and stuff?
Yeah, it does contemplate that stuff, but I think those are low estimates in terms of the numbers.
Yeah, fair.
And like, I've read numbers to say that the average age of a bricklayer in Ontario is like 55.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
You know, if you're slinging bricks, my goodness, I mean, that's hard labor, hard work. So we need more of those types of skills. And so I think what the government is trying to announce, and you saw that announcement last week from Monty, Mr. McNaughton, the Minister of Labor, that's all part of that shift that is happening, is that they're reorienting the education system, try and take advantage of this and get our workforce ready for this fantastic opportunity that exists in construction, in advanced manufacturing, in the technical trades, that is right now going unmet. So that's where the opportunity really lies. So
where do you think they got to address that? Is that in high school they address it, so they start introducing it a little bit more, or?
I think they have to, and I think they are. There was some controversy this past year where the government, even though there's a pandemic and lots of stresses in our schools, they insisted on introducing a revised math curriculum, a back to basics math curriculum. And I understand a science curriculum is being developed and it is in the pipeline. All of that stuff makes some sense. So that has to happen. We have to raise the game of teachers in our schools. You know, one of the reasons that we have a shortage, I think we have a really, a declining math scores in our high schools is because math is taught by history teachers. You know, if you were graduated, you know, 10, 15 years ago, and you were halfway decent in math, you're going to go work at Google versus going to work at Beamsville District Secondary School, right? So that's the problem that we've got, is we don't have enough really strong math teachers in our schools that are teaching it. So we're graduating really fantastic history and poli-sci majors. That's me. but we're not graduating enough really solid maths and science students, which is then translating into not enough of them going into those places in the schools. I think the second part that has to happen is in our guidance counselor offices. I read a really neat analogy today is that we need a third wall in every guidance counselor office. The one wall has all the university brochures. The second wall has all the college and community college brochures. And the third has to be, you know, the skilled trades brochures, opportunities. We need that sort of piece there. We need to remove the barriers to entry in apprenticeships. You know, a carpenter should be able to have more than one apprentice.
Absolutely. Working with. Absolutely.
You know, you're allowed to have more than one co-op student working for a financial planner or a mortgage broker, right? You know, why can't you have more than one apprentice on a job site? There's got to be some stuff there. Remove some barriers to mobility. Be able to move across the country a little bit more easily. We are one country. We shouldn't be having these kinds of mobility barriers across there. Reduce the cost to train. Like the skilled trades should be an absolute entry point for the most disadvantaged in our society. There should never be a story of saying someone, I can't afford to pay for the training.
Right.
Not to get political for a second, but you know me. I think this is one of the smartest, most politically advantageous policies that Stephen Harper government ever did a few years ago was he offered a tax credit for tools for tradesmen.
Yeah,
right.
And I know a lot of guys in my neighborhood who drive, you know, white panel vans and pickup trucks who took full advantage of that tax credit and bought a lot of tools that they needed and made it easier for them to do their business. We should be finding ways of getting the tools of the trade into those carpenters and pipe fitters and bricklayers' hands at lower costs. I think that would be a fantastic way to do this. And the other thing we need to do is break down the gender stereotypes.
Oh, absolutely.
Huge. This isn't, you know, it's five guys now talking, but we need more women in the trades.
Absolutely.
And I think
absolutely.
Monty McDonald has been talking about that a little bit lately, and so is Doug Ford and others. And I think that's absolutely where we need to go, because the skilled trades are not heavy physical manual labor. It's going to be about robotics going forward. You know, the big excavators are going to be run by robots. We can do that from a control booth, but that's going to require a whole new set of skills.
I'm a builder myself, Michael, and I deal with trades on a consistent basis. I think one of the other things they need to do to train them, they need to train them in customer service too, because you'll get a lot of trades that are good at their job, but their return for quotes, their follow up, their stuff like that is I'll say piss poor, and they're not trained on that. So they do lose customers and they don't get repeat business on that, even though they're excellent trades. So it's one of those things that I think that they, as much as they need to teach trades in schools, they also have to start teaching customer service, because that's something that leads to sales, which leads to you being able to employ your company or your tradespeople too. So I think that's one of the issues out there too, as far as trades. Actually, I'm seeing more women in this trade too, like painters and drywall finishers and stuff like that too. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think those skill sets in how to run a business, how to do marketing.
But I think that applies to everything.
Yeah,
I agree.
Lawyers, accountants, doctors, like, you don't know how many clients I've had that are accountants or some other kind of profession, and they're terrible business people. They're the worst. They have no clue where to turn.
A customer service, that it should be a skill itself in high school and stuff leading to the next phase of people's education.
Right.
I think that's lacking heavy, to be honest. I think the people with good usually go to the top.
Yep. I agree.
100%. That was my point of raising the earlier about lawyers complaining about not being taught how to be lawyers. It wasn't their understanding of constitutional law. It was their understanding of how to open up an office.
Absolutely.
How to do invoicing, how to do billings. Yeah. You know,
like some of it you'll learn in your articles, right? For a lawyer, your small placement, right? But not sure. What you would think is trite business, like from my perspective at this point in time. Like you were 70, saying, right? Just running your
70% of the complaints that go to the Law Society are revolve around poor communication between a lawyer and his client or her client. And a large portion of those are disputes over the bill, you know,
right.
Like it's basic business stuff. You know, how do you communicate your value proposition and throughout so that when the invoice arrives, you don't get shocked, to the point where you're pissed off and you file a complaint, you know?
Yeah.
That's the legal side, but it applies to just about every other field of professional endeavor.
So the if we go back just to because I think we're approaching, we like to keep our things around 20 minutes. So just based on our listenership.
Your attention span, Brandon.
My attention span.
That's 15 but, minutes ago.
I was going to say, yeah. It's done but, in the first minute.
What was the nuts and bolts of the announcement? Were they increasing funding and then cutting red tape essentially?
Yeah, I think so. I wasn't paying too specific attention to the announcement. I think what Monty was actually in last week announcing in Niagara was specifically cutting or providing more funding for personal support workers.
Right.
PSWs that will go into long-term care homes or do home care. So in the healthcare space, but again, a skilled trade, where we have a dramatic shortage of them. Now, some of that shortage in PSWs is because the salary structure hasn't, kept up with value, right?
You're not get paid enough at all.
You know, you're not paying me nearly enough, if you want me to go and change, adult diapers, right? So that's the issue there.
Yeah.
But as I understand it, that average hourly rate is creeping up, and that's a good thing. And some of the labor rules on that are a good thing. But I think it was just indicative, that one announcement was just indicative of a government who's got an approach that's a little bit different than in past years. What I find fascinating about it, putting aside the implications to colleges, universities, to the training sector, and everything else, is the political shift that this is leading to. Monty McNaughton is the first conservative labor minister to march in a Labor Day parade. He's being endorsed by private sector unions.
Mm-hmm.
He's building tremendous relationships with the private sector union leadership. Joe Mancinelli at LAUNA in Hamilton is singing Monty and Doug Ford's praises quite frequently. That's different. This is a group, LAUNA and the Labor's construction trades unions, that years ago were running attack ads against Tim Hudak.
Right.
And the Working Families Coalition stuff. That's a major political shift that I think cannot be underestimated, and is something to watch for in the next little while.
It's really positive. I'm just so glad that our education system is changing. I remember going to school, and I do remember, two brothers that were in our high school. One was really good with a pencil and was going to be a chartered accountant, and the other was like his brother. He could rebuild an engine in his driveway. The kid was brilliant. I just don't know how he did it. And he was made to feel like an absolute moron because he wasn't going to university. It's
right.
So sad. I know people that are my age right now. One's a master and electrician, graduated in my year. One was a master electrician now. The other one's has his HVAC license. And I was talking to the one that had his HVAC license, and he was sitting, we're in our approaching 40 or in our 40s. And he's like, Brandon, if I would have known that I would have loved pipe fitting and HVAC and all that now, I'd be retired by now.
Yeah.
Monetarily, I'd have been retired by now. But he went to university and he did the thing that his counselor told him to do and got a BA and bounced around from job to job to job. And now he found his passion and it's great. I'm glad he did it, in his late 30s when he did. But I mean, he says, I still have to make up 10 to 15 years of lost time because I would have been out of school by the age of 20 and making very good money at that stage doing something that I loved. And I was never encouraged to do it. And it's just so great that, change starts from the top. And it's so refreshing to see government change And then hopefully the schooling system slowly changed. Because I'm saying, I'm preaching whenever I say, if you don't want to go to university, by God, get a trade. Please get a trade, because I'll be paying $100, you know, $200 an hour for someone to rewire my house because I can't.
I think we have to be careful on two fronts here, though. The first is that we don't want to diminish the value of a BA any further than it already is, because a lot of people with a BA, yours truly included, have done well. But the reality is we have to be sort of mindful. We have to help people understand that just having a BA is not going to be enough.
Absolutely.
They need some more. The second part of it is we have to avoid what's been happening over the last, say, 60 or 70 years in Ontario especially, which is streaming and the inherent biases that happen at that level. The Ontario government just announced a few weeks ago or a few months ago some of the grade 8 to grade 9 streaming would be eliminated in order to stop what has basically been identified as systemic racism. If you were a black kid coming out of, an underprivileged neighborhood, you weren't getting into advanced English, advanced math, advanced science. You were streamed into
general,
the general courses. They're what we would refer to as the general courses in the day. Even in my own circumstance, coming out of grade 8, my dad was a worker for the town of Lincoln, a public works guy, and the guidance counselor in my hometown knew my dad. And so assumed I was going to be signed up for the shop classes and general classes. My mother marched down to the school and said, no, he's going to take advanced English, advanced science, advanced math until he fails. And I almost did, but I made it out of that class. Fast forward a number of years, I'm in a meeting. I'm the executive assistant to the MPP for Lincoln Riding, Frank Sheehan. And that guidance counselor was by that point a town counselor for the town of Lincoln. He came in to lobby us, and my boss couldn't take the meeting, so I took it. I'm all of 24 years old. I took the meeting with the guidance counselor, and he's lobbying me for funding for the town of Lincoln. I made him squirm. That was fun because, you know, he streamed me. Now, I'm not a racialized minority. I'm not – I don't have those disadvantages, but you can imagine, you know, my story times 1,000 is what a lot of kids are going to be. So – there is a fine balance to make sure that we're not streaming every kid into the trades because, you know, that's not the place they want to be. I think the opportunity is to provide many more options and to try and orient our school systems, secondary schools and post-secondary education institutions into making sure that we're providing job-ready skills. That's the real key to our future, I think.
And compounded with that is to not make them sound as though you're settling for a trade. You know what I mean? Oh, well, that's the stigma that when we went through, it was almost, I mean, I come from a mining town, so it was a little bit different, but you know, it's, you genuinely felt the feeling that if you didn't go to university, you were something less. And I would really like to see that disappear.
Yeah, I agree.
Nope. This was a great topic. Thanks very much, Michael. If there's any more development on it, we're going to ask you to come back on again and chat about it. But we do have another topic to chat with you about. It's going to be a bit more, way more interesting. It's about the U.S. election. So I'm pretty excited. So we'll wrap this one up. Thank you very much for everyone that's listening. Thank you to our guest, Michael Raz. Over to Josh.
Thank you for our sponsors, Sink and Lich at Brand Boulevard. Help us help you stay informed.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Produced by Cryer Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.